The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Little show we like to call Mission Minded. Put your mind and your mission, your mind. You do that with Michael Coleman. He is, of course, with the Montgomery Area Food Bank. They cover 35 counties here in the great state of Alabama, MAFB.org. He is previously, of course, with the Jimmy Hill Mission. And we talk about non-for-profits. We talk about for-profit businesses. We talk about best bosses. We talk about classified documents. We get into all kinds of business stuff. Michael, how you doing, brother? Everything good?
I wish I could say everything's good. I started off my morning not paying attention and wrecked my car, but not too bad.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, it's just one of those where you're not paying attention and you hit a little tree leaving your neighborhood in the morning at 4:30 in the morning. And you just get out and you're just like, man, you're such an idiot.
So, but you're okay, right?
Yeah, I'm fine, but. You know, today you bump a car at 10 miles an hour and you've done $3,000 of damage.
Well, as long as it was a tree and not another car, you're halfway home, baby. So there you go.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, listen, something we do here, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We ask for email questions. And about once a month, we get into a bunch of emails. We got a bunch of them. They're all over the road, but they're great questions. They're all tuned in to you. And we're going to start with Trina in Fort Worth. She says, I love my job. I can't afford to lose it. She's worked at this place for 12 years. I'm not going to mention where that is. But she said there's a lot of funny business going on behind closed doors. She wants Mike's thought on whistleblowers. Is it ever worth it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will tell you, there's some very clear laws to protect whistleblowers. The first thing I would recommend that you do is see what's going on. If you are absolutely sure, is to make sure that you document the date and the time and who you're doing this to. So I would not verbalize anything. I would send an email to that person so that you can prove that, and you would need to take that to your immediate supervisor. If you think your supervisor's involved in it, you still can bring it up to them, but again, document it. And once you document it, then you are protected against retaliation. And if a business organization retaliates against you, you can absolutely file an equal opportunity complaint and bring legal action if necessary. But no, you are absolutely protected. I would also look at your personnel policies. Every company should have those written out, and it should have a whistleblower policy in there. And so I would read through to make sure that you follow those guidelines very clearly about when you suspect something. Regardless of the nature, here's your reporting process. So I would recommend you follow that reporting process, but it's very important that you document it because otherwise it gets into a he said, she said. And if you get fired and then you're standing in front of somebody and they say, and they're not a person of integrity, they'll be like, well, she never brought anything up. We fired her because of poor performance. But if it's documented, and I would print it out, save a copy, it'll show the date and time that you raised this issue up, and it will protect you and likely keep them from retaliating against you.
Go ahead. Continue, please.
Yeah, I was going to also just say, and think about what it really means, what retaliation really means. It doesn't mean that they can't do anything. So, for instance, Trina, I don't know. I'm guessing that you are a great worker. So let's say all of a sudden that you've received great evaluations in the past, and now all of a sudden you get a lesson standard and nothing that you're aware of has changed in your job.
Yeah,
that can be viewed as retaliation. If all of a sudden you aren't worked as many hours as you are, all of a sudden the work environment becomes difficult because people are giving you the cold shoulder, or if they're making unreasonable demands that they had not made in the past. So anything about your job that all of a sudden drastically changes, whether it's the relationships within the office or something you can point to this tangible, that could all be evidence that there is retaliation taking place. Now, just understand, because I've had this before. I had somebody report something, had made a complaint in an email, not about me, or just it was just an offhanded comment in an email. And this person ultimately was terminated. It had nothing to do with what she was venting about in the email, but she accused me of retaliation. So I've been involved in this.
Yeah.
And so when I walked through, you know, I had to prove that the retaliation, and I had to show the evidence that the retaliation was based on poor performance and an unwillingness to comply with our policies and procedures. And it had nothing to do with what she was complaining about, but I was asked and I had to write statements to that effect. So I know those protections are in place. And it really has to do with, and we're going to be talking about this probably next week, but yeah, when we struggle, when we feel like our moral compass is really being tested, you know, I've seen people go, wow, I don't feel good about what's going on, but I need this job. And oh, it's just a terrible environment to find yourself in because you just don't feel like you have a lot of options. But the first step is follow the policies and procedures and elevate it up, but just write it down to protect yourself.
Yeah, and I would bet that you probably see some people that think they are going to get fired, and then it kind of turns into an extortionary type of situation where they're trying to find dirt on something going on in the office so they can try to save their job, and maybe that was a situation you're in. Your idea, and we'll get into it next week, I think it's going to be a fun show to do, pretty deep about moral codes and moral injury, I think is really interesting, because I do think some people get into a job, get into something, and they realize it's not what they thought it was, and they're actually making money for a particular individual or a company that's not doing things right, and it does play against your morals. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. This is Mission Money. You can hear the show at least 5 days a week, and Michael Coleman and I are working on doing some new stuff down the road. We'll have a big announcement about that hopefully coming up in the next few weeks, and of course, you can hear it wherever you get your podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. Jill in Abernet says she works at a place, I'm not going to mention where she works, but there's a male there that was hired after her, but she knows, and she's not supposed to know this, that he makes at least $2 more an hour. How can I check with my boss about the disparity in pay?
Yeah, so it's a great question, and it's a delicate question. Sometimes it depends on who your bosses are. It depends on how free they are with information. I was not involved in this, but I'm very well aware of a situation to where there was an employee who felt like she was a counselor. She had a social, not a counseling degree. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on what degree she had. Doesn't matter. It wasn't a counseling degree. She was doing a good job as a counselor, and she had requested, had come to believe, however she found out, that she was making less, and so she requested a certain amount of a raise, and she was actually given that money, but she was still not satisfied that she was being paid what other people were being paid. And so she ended up filing an EEOC, Equal Opportunity Commission, and every state has them. It's a federal agency. You can file a complaint online. You are totally protected when you file that, because again, if you're terminated or if behavior changes once you file an EEOC complaint, you're protected through that. But if an EEOC complaint, when it's brought, a charge is brought, it forces the organization to respond, and they can't just respond to, no, this complaint's false. They have to, with documentation, prove that what you're saying is not correct.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can do that, then usually the EOC will come back and go, okay, there's no reason. They have to give what's called a right to sue letter.
Yeah.
But they will tell you, we don't find any findings, or they do find findings, and this is through mediation or whatever that they offer. This is how it was corrected.
Michael, is there any situation where if you and I were hired on the same day and we're performing the same job and we do the exact same thing, our production level is the same, but you're making more than I am just because the boss likes you more? Because maybe you have a better attitude, or maybe you get there a little earlier, maybe you leave a little later, or maybe you don't use all of your sick days every year. Is that fair?
Well, it's very interesting, because it's fair if I can document and show why somebody's getting paid more for the same job. So where you get into a struggle is let's say this, well, we're talking to Jill. So Jill's a woman. So women are a protected class. And the truth of the matter is, everybody's a protected class except white males. And that's just a reality. You know, if you're a different, if you're anybody in the minority, so if you're a person of color, you're a protected class. If you are somebody who's disabled, you're a protected class. So in our case, if you filed a complaint and said, hey, we're doing the same job, then what they would do is they would say, okay, let's see their job descriptions. They'd see, are our job descriptions the same? Or is our experience the same? So let me go back to this example that I was given. This lady was saying, I should be making more than these men. And it turns out that those men had graduate degrees. One had a PhD, and one had more years of experience. So you could document and say, well, wait a minute, this guy has a PhD where you have a master's. He's been doing this 12 years as opposed to you've been doing it 3 years. So the justification for paying this person more money is based on experience and based on education level. Where you get in trouble as a business is if you can't justify. Yeah, so let's say you have counselors, and let's say you have a team of counselors, and you have six counselors, and all of a sudden there's two counselors that aren't making what the other four are, but let's say you're all hired at the same time. Well, if those counselors are both women, then the complaint might be, well, you're not paying women the same as men. And so the EOC, that's what it's there for. It's there to, as that check and balance, to say, okay, business, you're doing this on, there's a case to be made, at least on paper, that you got to supply the reason. And the truth of the matter is that when you can't do it, then you've left open to fill in the blanks. It may not be because they're women, but if you can't justify it, like, let's say, I just prefer this person, or I like this person.
Yeah.
That's where you really get jammed up, because now they have a huge standing because you can't give a real reason. And especially if they're a person of color or some protected class, I'm telling you, it's those protections are in place for that reason. Now, let me go back to Jill just for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I always think that EOC is your last place of resolution. I think you're completely warranted. If that's what you've heard, I would go to your HR and say, hey, this is the word on the street, and let your AR and your HR usually can address those issues. If it's a small company and you may not have, like, somebody may be in HR, but they're doing several other functions, you know, maybe they don't supply that information. I don't know. But I would recommend always to resolve it at the first level, because regardless if it's right or wrong, if you go to EOC, that always changes the dynamic.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, I mean, you just got to be ready for that. And you got to ask yourself, am I being treated unfairly? If so, that's the pathway ultimately that's going to get you back right with the group. and to make a company be accountable for what they're doing.
And the thing you keep bringing up, the thing you keep bringing up too, is documentation. I mean, just make sure you get documentation.
Yeah.
I mean, we like to think just because we tell the truth, everyone does, and it just doesn't go that way.
Sure.
Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Lots of emails to get to here. This is Mission Mind. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. You can hear at least 5 days a week on TKR and the TKR app. Thanks to the thousands of folks who have downloaded that bad boy. We greatly appreciate that. Listen to classic rock and roll in between every one of our 13 shows. We do more shows in the way. Zach in Montgomery said, if MAFB would have an endless supply of this, what would it be and why?
Well, I guess.
Where do you want to start?
Yeah. So if MAFB had an endless supply of this, now finish that question again.
What would it be and why? The first thing I would think would be meat, but you know, you got a lot of people that don't eat meat, so I don't know if that would be the good thing, because meat, I know, is the most expensive thing you probably dole out. But what if you had an endless supply of this down in Montgomery right now in your freezer, in your 40,000 square foot freezer with all your food and your people down there, what would it be and why?
Well, I will tell you, it's different what we have endless supplies of and what we need endless supplies of. You love the endless supplies of cash.
Yeah, well,
that way you could bring some real solutions, but that's not realistic.
I think this is just as food. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but when you talk about food, there's so many things to consider that I don't think, you know, I certainly didn't until I got in this position. So for instance, you're right. We can get our hands on, a truckload of chicken, cut up into chicken tenders, we can get a 40,000 pound truckload in. Here's the problem is that when we dole that out in the community, it's not that the people don't want it, but an agency doesn't oftentimes have capacity to be able to store it, because one of the things we're very particular about is we have to follow food safety guidelines. And so that food, if it's frozen, by the time we give it to an agency and then that agency takes it back to their place and then they distribute it out on whatever day, that's got to be stored in a frozen container. And so most of them have, you know, maybe a stand-up freezer or a couple of chest freezers. And so it really doesn't have that much capacity. So part of our challenge is building capacity. And matter of fact, Feeding America is really helping us do that. But whatever we have, there's always a real challenge. Even
so, answer the question. Why you're talking in circles? What would it be and why?
Well, maybe I'm talking in circles because I don't have a good answer. I don't know what the answer to that question would be if I had an endless supply of it. Because I think my mind, you're right, Tony, I'm talking around circles. Because the thing that pops in my head is if I had an endless supply of produce, well, the problem is it rots before we can get it out to the people.
Yeah.
If we have endless supplies of canned goods, then they go bad before we can get it all. I mean, it's just always a distribution challenge.
Yeah, just keep giving and it will be fine at the MontgomeryAreaFoodBank.org. Check
if
it out.
If I had endless supplies of volunteers, though, I tell you. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Steve in San Bernardino was one of the 1,300 or 15% of the workforce of Zoom who was laid off last week. He said after 2 years, he got laid off. Of course, he took his job during the pandemic. And he was told by them that if they return him back to the workforce at Zoom within a 2-year period, he'll pick up where he left off with his full benefits. He'll be vested and everything else. He's asking the question, what do you think the chances are that's going to happen with Zoom? And he also talked about what are some of the risks in taking a job in an explosive market? Great question, because we've seen things, Zoom blew up. I mean, obviously everyone was at home doing Zoom. And you know, if you took a job with Zoom, that there was a good chance that things were going to correct themselves after the pandemic was over and you were going to be out of a job. And now he's in that situation. You have any thoughts on that?
I sure do. I just got through reading a fascinating article that was dealing with some of this very stuff. And it's talking about specifically the tech industry is using this time. This is not the 100% of the issue, but they're using this time to win the control back over the employee environment, because there was so much need, so many people were coming in, so they had all these perks. I remember when Elon Musk went in there and he was talking about, you know, they brought in 800 something hot lunches a day, yep. You know, and just that huge cost. And because employees were demanding that, and now they're laying off 20 and 30. You see all these people go, man, I was on this gravy train and now it's gone. And now what they're saying is, hey, we're going to invite you back at some point, but you're going to come back at a lower salary. I mean, you may come back with the same benefits or the same what's vested in terms of retirement or whatever. That does not mean you're going to come back at the same salary. And the truth of the matter is they could string you along forever. So I wouldn't burn that bridge, but I would certainly begin to think outside of that because you have no idea, as fast as tech changes, you have no idea what it's going to look like, what the landscape's going to look like in 2 years. 2 years is an eternity when you're dealing in the tech world.
Yeah.
So I would look internally about where are my skills, which means you're likely going to have to be open to changing your area, moving somewhere, and being flexible to where the job market depends. And it may mean, hey, I'm going to have to take a job that's below or beneath maybe where I feel like I have been. But a lot of people are going to have to learn the hard way that the job market is just going through a shift right now. And it'll settle out and it'll flip back around eventually. But for those who – I've seen it before where people go, well, I'm worth this, and I'm not working for a dime under $100,000. And then, you know, 3 years goes by and no jobs come along for $100,000, yep. $200,000, or whatever you're making. So, I mean, I don't know what your financial situation is, but I just don't think it's healthy for a young adult. You know, and somebody in their 20s and 30s, even the early 40s, to sit out of work for 3 or 4 years, unless you're invested in a hobby that's really serving people, serving your community, because I just don't think that's healthy. And I think you could turn around very quickly, and the technology that you have now that's easy to stay up on when you're inside of a company, 3 years from now, you could be on the outside looking in.
I'm going to blow some people away. 25 or 30 years ago, when you took a good paying job, they paid your health insurance.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden they're like, hey, listen, we need a little help. Can you pay $100 a month? And you're like, sure. And now pretty much we're paying our own health insurance high and above the cost of what we're getting paid. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Mission Minded with Michael Coleman. Great show we do every single week. You hear it at least 5 times a week on TKR, wherever you get your podcast. Keep listening to the show. We're at least 52 episodes into it. Charlie wants to know, and he heard us talking about last week or the week before about natural disasters and how that affects food banks, Feeding America, the Montgomery Food Bank. He wants to know if you guys are, how you are dealing with the Syria-Turkey earthquake. Now nearly 35,000 people have perished. It's just a horrible situation. I have a friend of mine owns a place over in Istanbul right now, and just he's fine. He was in London at the time of the earthquake, but he's like, it's just horrible. It's unbelievable. But does that affect us? I mean, I know our government is helping them out. I know there's sanctions also against Syria because it's a tour worn, and God bless those people. They're going through a civil war. They're going through winter and an earthquake. I can't imagine one of those is bad enough. All three is almost insurmountable. But how does that affect us here when disasters happen in other foreign lands?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And really more so, at least initially, indirectly, because the U.S. government keeps stockpiles of wheat and cheese. And, you know, growing up, you saw those little blocks of cheese that said U.S. government.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like a brick of cheese. Mm-hmm. And they have all that stored away through the USDA and all those kind of places. And when a national disaster happens and they have to go help out a country. And first of all, you're never going to find a country. The United States steps up no matter where the tragedy is, and more so than any other country in the world. We're so generous as just a nation and stepping forward with supplies and help, and food is certainly part of that. So what ends up happening is if the USDA has a certain amount of food and the government has emergency supplies and they ship that off, then they have to repurchase that. And oftentimes that could be not bags of grain kind of thing, but that some of the other products that they have could much more likely be distributed out to our own nation. And so we might miss out on some of that. But The truth of the matter is, you know, we deliver food. We're responsible for our counties that are assigned to us. So they're not taking food away from us to take to people. But down the road, if they had surplus of food at the USDA that wasn't used for that disaster, it might be food that they could distribute across the different states and the food banks in those states.
All right, I think we got time for a couple more here. Ursula in Jacksonville says, with unemployment at a 50-year low, she wants to know, Michael, how many people are actually working jobs they want to work, and where are most of the jobs coming from? It's a good question. There's a lot of, it's funny because I mean, growing up, man, if you had more than one job, you were so blessed. You got what? You got three jobs, you know, not because you could do it, but because they were out there to be had and you found three jobs to work. Now you can work pretty much as many jobs you want, but is it something you really, really want to do? And it's so transient because I think there are just a lot of service jobs that other people, quite frankly, don't want to do for the rest of their lives. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah, so, I mean, you have to think about it. A lot of people have extra jobs, but not because they aspire to. With inflationary demands, they're taking jobs that being an Uber driver or Lyft driver. Like you said, they've always delivered pizzas or worked in restaurants or, you know, caught shifts and stuff like that. I tell you, if you can find a job that's impactful to you, that is interesting to you, I mean, it's a real blessing. You ought to. Because when push comes to shove, whether you like a job or not, we have responsibilities to our family and to our children. And, you know, sometimes we just got to suck it up and do those kind of things. And I think we see what the tech industry is doing right now. It's shedding tens of thousands of jobs and maybe hundreds of thousands of jobs before it's all over with. And other things seem to be holding pretty well right now. You know, there's manufacturing and other places, but it's hard sometimes to find that exact. And I'm not an employment expert, but I will tell you, we're certainly hiring here. And exactly what we're looking for is people who can present to us, not necessarily based on how much education they have, but do they have a heart? Do they have a passion to serve other people? And so we intend to make that a very meaningful position when they come on board. But I tell you what, I still know lots of people who are pulling two or three jobs just because they're trying to make ends meet, and it's tough.
There's no doubt. All right, you want to take one more question?
Yeah, let's one more.
Duke in Holly Pond wants to know, he's a part of the military. He heard our show about classified documents, one of our most listened to shows. And he said, being in the military, and he had heard your experience as well, and he totally agreed with that. He loved what you had to say. But he said, when you get behind closed doors, almost everything you talk about is a classified document. And he said, a lot of the classified, just when you say classified document, everyone thinks it's something super, super important. And in many cases, it's not. And he just wanted to make the interpretation of what you were talking about, that there are a lot of classified documents that, quite frankly, people have that they don't even know they have. And again, I guess when you see something that says top secret, it's a different type of classified document. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah. So, first of all, he's exactly right that lots of times it seems very arbitrary. And lots of times I remember documents by themselves really didn't reveal a lot of stuff. But it was like a piece of the puzzle to something else. So standing alone, there wasn't much value to it, but it was still classified, usually a secret, because when your intelligence is about putting pieces of the puzzle together. And so it was just one more piece of the puzzle. And so they had to protect it. But I will tell you, I saw this with Mike Pence, a document that they were pulling out of his house, I think, or that they had taken off his property. There was a cover letter, and it looked just like the cover letters from back in the day. But any kind of classified document, it'll have a cover letter, and it says secret. Or I think, if I remember right, the red was secret, blue was top secret. But it would say top secret, not just the color. And so there would be a cover page, and there were certain ways that you had to, you know, you just couldn't walk out of the protected area with classified documents. Had to be in a briefcase. You had to do certain things. And so, like I said, I understand they get access to so many documents, but it's when you peel all that back, it's just very concerning that, you know, there's not the accountability that somebody's saying, okay, I gave the president, you know, there's 30 top secret documents that left here. And you can't just make a copy of a top secret document on a copier that's not prepared for that kind of stuff. So you have to, they call it a SCIF, you know, behind in these special areas where you make these documents. So if you send 30 documents out, there should have been somebody that goes, hey, it's been a week, I'm missing these documents, and at least, you know, raise that flag up. And it appears by everybody having these documents and having them in different houses, different locations, the president left office with some, maybe that's a common practice. But the bottom line is there's all these classified documents out there, and you're asking yourself, where is the accountability from our government? And that's what's most concerning to me, regardless of who's got it. If you got it out, if we took classified documents out, if we were authorized to, and we did, it was to bring it from one place to the next, and we had a deadline, we had to bring it back, and boy, you had to, I mean, and you were throwing your whole military career away if you mishandled those documents.
Michael, fantastic stuff. info@tonycurryradio.net. About once or twice a month, we'll get into all your email questions, so keep them coming. info@tonycurryradio.net. Go to mafb.org to help out the Montgomery Area Food Bank. Michael, we appreciate you, man. We'll catch up next week.
All right, absolutely.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.